This podcast is for general informational purposes only and not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The medical contents and information provided are solely the opinion of the guest speaker. Lung and Learn. Interesting topics about all things respiratory.
Welcome to this edition of Lung and Learn. I'm your host, Dr. Anna Spearin. Day to day, I talk to physicians about current respiratory publications and their impact on clinical practice. Today, I'm here with Dr. Dan Durand from Lakeshore General Hospital in Pointe Claire, and he's here to discuss oscillometry. Thank you for being here with us today, Dr. Dan Durand. Let's get started off by getting to know a bit about you and how you became interested in oscillometry.
Well, Anna, that's a long question and interesting depending on your point of view. Once upon a time, when I was a much younger man, I'd spent 5 years at the Meekins Christie Laboratories training in advanced physiology.
Oh, yeah.
As well as cell and molecular techniques and lung tissue techniques. So I was exposed to many different methodologies to study the small airways.
Very cool.
While I was preparing for all of my future experiments, a number of things were going on in other labs at the Meekins. You had Jason Bates, who was working in the basement with his fellows, Thomas Schussler and Jeff Maxim, and they were developing what ultimately became the FlexiVent ventilator, which is an oscillation mechanics-driven way of evaluating animals.
Interesting.
At the same time, a certain Hajime Kurosawa came over as a young fellow for me to teach lung explants, which I had recently developed for the study of airways disease. And he went back to Japan, apparently with more knowledge than simply lung explants.
Oh, yeah? And so what were you up to?
I left Meekins back over 30 years ago, and a few decades into clinical practice, I decided that I might like to return to research.
Okay.
So in Vienna, at my first ERS, when I was registering, I saw this tall gentleman walk over to me, and it was said Jeff Maxim, who had gone on to become the research director of bioengineering at Dalhousie University.
Uh-huh.
And Jeff and Thomas had not only brought to market the FlexiVent, but they had then in turn developed the Tremoflow by having a company, Thoracis, develop and market it. So this was the Canadian oscillometer.
Oh, wow. That's really cool. So Canada's actually one of oscillometry's pioneers. Interesting. So what else was going on around that time?
At the same time, Hajime Kurosawa had returned to Japan. He developed the MOSGRAPH. And the MOSGRAPH is probably the most widely deployed oscillometry, and he has one half of Japan managing their patients with oscillation mechanics rather than spirometry.
Wow.
Having met Jeff, I decided that I would jump back into advanced physiology, but since I was a full-time clinician, this would be in the context of deploying it in my practice. So in 2014, I bought an oscillometer and started using it as of 2015, as soon as it was Health Canada approved.
That's cool. So you were on the cutting edge.
Exactly. So, wanting to refine my skills further, and based on readings, I decided I should meet some of the key opinion leaders in oscillometry, and I sought out one Raphael Delica from Milan Polytechnical Institute, and he had developed a oscillometer called the Resmon Pro.
Okay.
When we met, I looked at him and I said, I've read your papers. I really want to pick your brain for more information. I said, I've trained at the Meekins back in the day, and Peter Macklin was a big influence. He looked at me with tears in his eyes and told me we were brothers and gave me a hug.
Amazing.
When Peter Macklin was absent from the Meekins Christie at that time, he was in Northern Italy teaching Raphael Delica, who was then his fellow in Japan.
Wow. Very cool. So you've now told us you're connected to the developers of the Tremoflow, the MOSGRAPH, and the Resmon Pro. Any others?
I've since had the privilege to befriend and have over to my house for barbecue and swim Hans Jürgen Smith. That's the fourth piece of the puzzle. He developed in East Germany the IOS with Jaeger, which was the first oscillometer to hit the market.
Okay, wow, that's four oscillometers now.
Yes, exactly. The fifth piece of the puzzle would be the COSMED device. Now, COSMED is an oscillometer owned by the Italian group and based in Rome.
Uh-huh.
But it had been initially bought from a Belgian company,
okay,
which had in turn developed it with a one Bollant DeRosi. Bollant happened to be the first research fellow of Zoltán Antos, who's based in Hungary, who has become one of my best friends and with whom I'm doing extensive oscillometry research, not only in the conventional spectral methodology, but also on what we call intrabreath, which will be likely the future of oscillometry in the coming years.
That's interesting.
So there you have it. I had a near personal relationship with all five of the developers and marketers of the current oscillometry devices.
Wow. Amazing. You're so interconnected. So with all these crucial relationships, what are you working on now?
That's a great question. And my personal relationship allowed me to bring together all five manufacturers around one table where we've met twice a year for the past 3 years to discuss how to ensure that all of the oscillometry devices give perfect agreement.
Oh, yeah.
Much the same process that spirometry went through the latter part of last century and ending, I think, in about 2005.
Right.
The Salt Lake City Group had standardized waveforms that spirometers must pass in order to be certified. Well, we've developed mechanical test models here in Montreal that do a similar testing of oscillometry devices.
I see. And all this is happening in Montreal?
Yes, we're the only center in the world to have all five oscillometry devices under one roof, and we're in a position to do it. And now that the results are soon to be published, the manufacturers acknowledge the differences between devices, and rather than walking away and going into a competitive mode, they are cooperating to harmonize the outputs of all their devices so that in the near future, our timeline is 2 years, it will not matter what oscillometry you buy, you will get a reliable result that will be in agreement with any other manufacturer's oscillometer.
Wonderful. Dr. Dandurand, that's quite the story, and that's great for the future of oscillometry. So let's just take it back a step. Can you define what oscillometry is for us?
Certainly. For those of you who have not yet fallen asleep, oscillometry is a method of measuring lung function by means of acoustic energy applied to the mouth. That's all.
Right. That sounds simple enough. Sound waves. So how long has oscillometry been used in the respiratory medicine field?
Well, that's a great question, and you will probably be very surprised with the answer. 68 years.
Oh, wow.
That's only 4 years less than for spirometry.
Wow.
So the Tifano Index was first published in 1947. Oscillometry was first performed in a dog in 1951. 2 years later, in 1953, seven humans were studied using oscillation mechanics.
Uh-huh.
And then finally in 1956, the classic study performed by Arthur Dubois was published in the Journal of Applied Physiology.
Wow. So it's actually been around for quite a long time.
Yes.
Who knew? Can you tell us how it differs from spirometry, which is what clinicians are much more familiar with?
Oscillometry differs from force spirometry in several respects. Firstly, it's more widely deployable and requires only a minimum of patient effort. For example, we use oscillometry in neonates, in the bedridden elderly, in neuromuscular, in tracheotomy, and in intubated patients in the intensive care units.
Right.
We can use oscillometry amongst those who have contraindications to forced spirometry, such as a recent massive pulmonary embolism, a recent myocardial infarction, or recent cataract surgery.
That's great.
Secondly, it is much more sensitive at detecting peripheral airway pathology than forced spirometry.
I see.
And lastly, unlike forced spirometry, it does not alter the mechanics of the respiratory system.
Hmm.
Any time you take a deep inspiration, you are actually changing the state of your patient's airways. Some bronchoconstrict, some bronchodilate. Hence, oscillometry is a better reflection of the true state of your patient's lung health.
Hmm, that's really interesting. In summary, it sounds like it's easier on the patient, it's safer, and it better reflects even small changes in the physiology of the lungs. So as the expert in the field, how have you been using oscillometry?
Well, as you know, oscillometry is not amongst any of the guidelines. And being a good clinician, or what I hope is a good clinician, I use it in parallel or as an adjunct to force spirometry for the most part.
Right.
In addition to the patients that I mentioned previously, where forced spirometry is not an option, I have a number of patients who have undergone oscillometry and now refuse to perform forced spirometry.
Oh yeah? That's hilarious.
I've coined the term oscillometry rebellion to describe this phenomenon, and I just put it out there because I predict that any other clinician who adopts oscillation mechanics into his practice is going to experience the same phenomenon, and I just wanted you to be forewarned.
I consider myself forewarned, and I'm sure everyone else is grateful for the heads up. Have you found any specific groups of patients to be better off just having oscillometry because spirometry wouldn't be sufficient?
Based on the current published evidence, oscillometry is best suited for the diagnosis and management of both asthma and COPD.
Right.
There is an emerging literature that supports the notion that those with predominantly small airways disease are best treated with what are called ultrafine inhalation medications. Those are medications that have an MMAD less than 2.5 microns. Unlike forced spirometry, oscillometry is able to identify those patients that have predominantly peripheral lung pathology.
Oh, so not just obstructive lung disease then?
Exactly. In addition to obstructive lung disease, there is also an evolving literature that suggests oscillometry may have a role in the management of interstitial lung disease.
Great.
Finally, we are also repeating work that had been done back in the early 2000s by Mike Goldsman in California. What Mike showed is that in the post-transplant patient, the bronchiolitis obliterans could be picked up by forced oscillometry well ahead of any changes you might be detecting with forced spirometry.
Okay.
The Toronto group, the Chow Labs at the University of Toronto, are currently following a very large cohort of post-lung transplant patients with oscillometry, and their preliminary results are supporting these initial findings.
Wow, that's fantastic. It looks like there's truly a large role for oscillometry in the diagnosis and follow-up of a number of lung diseases. So is oscillometry catching all these conditions at an earlier stage?
Good question, and the answer is absolutely yes.
Great.
Oscillometry detects lung disease at an earlier stage than does forced spirometry, and this is part of the reason that we are advocating its wider deployment.
Okay. Do you have any interesting examples to share?
There are many publications, but my favorite, in fact, comes from south of the border. The group at the Bellevue Hospital in New York City have been following the World Trade Center first responders.
Oh yeah? Interesting.
And what they found amongst this group of patients who were complaining of respiratory symptoms and all had normal forced spirometry, they found that this group indeed had abnormal oscillometry.
Wow.
Furthermore, with treatment, the oscillometry abnormalities resolved, while the symptoms also resolved.
Mm-hmm.
However, the forced spirometry always remained unchanging and normal throughout.
Ah, that's really interesting. There could be a lot of individuals out there complaining of various respiratory diseases, having negative spirometry, and being told that there's nothing wrong with them. There's probably a case to be made for greater recognition of oscillometry in the respiratory community.
Well, Anna, unfortunately, in fact, sadly, the level of recognition remains very low. Only clinicians who would have a background in advanced physiology or those directly involved in research are likely to be using oscillometry, given its absence in the guidelines.
I see.
However, and happily, this will likely change soon. I work with a number of other oscillometry experts at the international level, and we've been educating members of both GINA and GOLD on the advantages of oscillometry for the past 3 years.
Amazing. That's important. In the meantime, what would you suggest to those who want to learn more about oscillometry?
My strongest suggestion is to stop being fearful of oscillometry because you don't understand the technology.
Right.
The oscillometry literature, I agree, is cloaked with engineering terms which make no sense to many of us. And this, in part, is responsible for its slow uptake by clinicians.
I see.
However, if we think back to what we do in our everyday practice, If we were to insist on understanding the equations behind the rendering of radiation scatter, what the engineers call the sonogram or the raw data of CT scans, and how it's rendered into the final image, we would be unable to deliver effective care to our patients.
Right.
But we don't. We embrace CT scan images even though we don't understand the details that make them possible.
Yeah.
The same is true for EKGs.
Right. That's a really good analogy. With more data, availability, and standardization, hopefully this emerging tool can be embraced on a larger scale.
Exactly.
Very cool. Any final thoughts, Dr. Tangerian?
I hope this podcast is of use, and more importantly, if we see it happen to see each other at meetings, please feel free to stop me and let me know if your experiences based on your adopting oscillometry into your own clinical practice has led you to the same conclusions that I have just rendered during this podcast.
And that concludes this podcast. Dr. Dandrian, thank you very much for sharing your knowledge of oscillometry with us.
Thank you very much for listening.
It's been very insightful. If you found this episode on oscillometry interesting, you might consider listening to our other Lung and Learn podcasts, which cover topics such as dyspnea and COPD. Until next time, thanks for listening.